MacCast, Wednesday, September 24th, 2014. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I've got a great show for you today because we are going back to something that we haven't done in a while. The Three Amigos are back on this episode of the MacCast. Historically, it used to be myself, Ken Ray, and Victor Cajiao. Victor has retired. And we have a great, he's not a fill-in, he's not a replacement. We just have another great member to the Three Amigos team, and that is David Sparks from Mac Power Users, also Mac Sparky Field Guides. And I got the three of us together. A few of you had asked me through email, Twitter, other outlets to do another one of these episodes, specifically since so much has been going on with Apple lately. We've got the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus to talk about, so we definitely dive into that. A few of us have those devices, some are on their way, and we talk about our thoughts and opinions on size and all the other things. Bendgate, I know some of you want to know our thoughts and opinions on that, so we talk about that a little bit and get into a bunch of other stuff. We also dive into Apple Pay and the Apple Watch and a little bit of what we think is going to be next. And we didn't even get into iOS 8, so we may have to come back and revisit and do another Three Amigos episode sometime in the near future. Let me know what you think. If you enjoy these episodes, I always enjoy recording them. These guys are really smart. It's great to get everybody kind of in a virtual room on Skype and just hash this stuff out and talk about it. There's so much going on and so much to talk about. But before we get into the episode, I do need to take a quick moment and thank a couple of show sponsors. We have a new sponsor here on the MacCast, MacPaw. They make a bunch of stuff, including Clean My Mac 2. And if you're like me, you have stuff on your Mac that you've had there for years, right? We get a lot of cruft. We get a lot of buildup of old files, and we install apps and uninstall apps, and there's stuff left behind, and it's all over your system, and you don't know where it is. You don't really want to deal with it. It's just a pain, you know, so you just kind of leave it there. But eventually, it builds up. It takes up space, and suddenly you only have like 5% room on your drive, even though you thought, you know, when am I ever going to fill up that many terabytes of data? Well, guess what? It happens. And Clean My Mac is specifically for that. It makes space for the things you love, and it has a bunch of really cool features, and it takes care of cleaning up your Mac safely and intelligently. They've been doing this for a long time, and they make the whole process really easy. So it doesn't just clear out system junk. It also will help you look for and find large files that you've forgotten about and get rid of those old installer files, .dmg files, maybe old movie files that you haven't watched in years. Hey, you can archive that stuff and maybe get off of your main system. It'll help you locate those things. There's a bunch of cool iPhoto features. I had no idea how much cruft was inside iPhoto. As a matter of fact, I just used Clean My Mac to remove almost 52 gigabytes of data from my Mac, and I just used the automated scan. So it has a one-click operation. You can go and have it do an automated scan of everything, and then it'll give you a little summary, and you can kind of pick and choose, which I really like. But I didn't know that iPhoto was keeping these optimized device versions of my photos for every device that I've had, like, probably forever. You know, iPod-optimized versions, every version of an iPhone or an iPad that I ever synced photos to, it created images, and a lot of times those are duplicate images, saved little thumbnails of those. There were 36 gigabytes of that stuff alone on my system. Or how about things like photos you've done red-eye removal on, or maybe rotated because they were oriented wrong when you imported them? Did you know it keeps all of the originals? So when are you ever going to go back to the non-red-eye corrected one, or the, you know, one that was oriented incorrectly? Probably never. So do you really need to keep that stuff around? It'll show you that stuff and help you remove it. And it does give you a chance to kind of see everything before it cleans everything off. You can even have it go to the trash before it just removes it if you're worried about that sort of thing. So there's a bunch of checks and balances in there. They built up a whole set of rules and exceptions to make sure that you're only cleaning up junk files or stuff that can be safely removed. They have a, what they call a safety database that they've been building up over 5 years to make sure that it doesn't get rid of something that's vital or important to your system. I really think it's one of the best apps for cleaning your Mac. And here's a good deal. MacCast listeners, MacPaw is giving you a 30% discount on Clean My Mac 2. So all you have to do is visit MacPaw.com. That's MacPaw.com/MacCast, and they'll give you a 30% discount on Clean My Mac 2. So check it out. Great stuff. Can really save room on your hard drive. And a big thank you to MacPaw for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to thank Smile. You know, they make a bunch of great stuff that I love. Text Expander, PDF Pen. This month, I want to talk to you about PDF Pen Scan Plus, their iOS app for getting documents, scanning documents in to PDF format right with your device. You know, when you're going paperless, I really think the best time to scan a document is right when you receive it, right? You open up your mail, you're right there. Why not scan it in right then and there? I've had stacks of documents sitting on my desk that I've meant to scan into my paperless system, you know, someday, and it never seems to happen, and then they just build up, and it becomes this daunting task. You also need kind of a centralized location for all those documents to go into. Probably these days, it's going to be something like cloud storage, Dropbox, something like that, something that you're going to have access to from any device, any computer, anytime you need it. And PDF Pen Scan Plus can help you with all of that. It can let you scan multiple page documents right in and do all the post-processing, adjust your image, adjust for skewing and things like that right inside your iOS device. You can scan different sizes of documents, receipts, custom paper sizes, doesn't matter. And it'll even do OCR on the text right there on the page. And you can see it as an overlay to make sure that it's accurate. The stuff that's going in, it's going to get embedded into the PDF. That's what you're going to use to search and find your documents later. Handles all of that stuff. You can crop, and they just improved the OCR accuracy and the OCR text layout. Not only that, they just released version 1.4, and it has some new features. It'll auto-export new scans now right into Dropbox or right into PDF Pen's cloud, iCloud storage. That lets you share your PDF Pen documents on iOS or with Mac devices. Makes it really easy to get at that stuff. They now remember the last folder you used to import or export, so you don't have to reset that every time. It can just always go to the same location. And there's prompts now that you can turn on to rename documents, including adding the current date, which is always helpful to have a little timestamp on there. So they got all that and a bunch of other great features. You should check it out. It's on the App Store, PDF Pen Scan Plus. And also check out smilesoftware.com for all of their other great applications. And a big thank you to Smile for their support of the MacCast. So I don't want to waste any more time in getting into today's episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here are three amigos talking about all the latest and greatest stuff from Apple. Hey, David, how you doing?
Outstanding, Adam.
Yeah. Thank you for agreeing to sit down with us. And Ken Ray is here as well. Hey, Ken.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. I just realized I've got a rule on iHeartRadio that if anybody says, how are you doing? The answer is nobody cares. And I forgot that. I was going to answer that way, and then I got thrown. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was just thinking, if we're the Three Amigos, I'm just thinking about those Disney that Disney movie, and trying to figure out which one I am.
Is that a Disney movie?
No. You see, that's the Three Caballeros, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
And the Three Amigos are Chevy Chase, Martin Short, and Steve Martin.
Well, I'm not that smart.
I call not Chevy Chase or Chevy Chase.
Oh, man. I think that's just basically a race there, whoever's not Chevy Chase. Yeah, I'm the shortest, so that probably means something.
I guess we're the Three Apple Amigos or something, Tech Amigos. I have no idea. But this was something we started back with, and we should give a nod to our friend Victor Cahiao, who has moved on and is doing other things. But David started filling in on our Three Amigos, and we haven't done this in a while. So I was getting requests from my audience that with everything that's been going on with Apple this month and probably in the next couple months, that we sit down and sort of do a roundtable and talk through all the things that have been happening. So I think the natural place to sort of start is probably with the new phones, which some of us have, some of us are maybe waiting on. So Ken, you have an iPhone 6, right?
I do. Yes. I got it, it was delivered on that Friday. I was amazed though, cuz I went to the Apple Store on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And there were like 30 people in line at the Apple Store. I don't know what it's like now cuz I haven't been back, but I would imagine the lines have to have died down at some point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there were still people lined up outside. There was actually a picture of it in iChart magazine.
Which
mostly because I was just stunned that it was still happening.
Which is really funny because I don't know if you guys know, but a listener of mine pointed out that, you know, you can go on in the wee hours, and I think it's usually best to do it. I don't know when they update the inventories, but, you know, you can go on Apple's website and you can still order for in-store pickup, and you can check availability at the different Apple stores. Mm-hmm. So you can see if they have a 6 or a 6 Plus before you even commit to going in there. And as a matter of fact, I think you can even order it and then just go in and do in-store pickup. So I had somebody who on Sunday, or it was either Saturday or Sunday after the launch, they just woke up early in the morning, checked the inventory in their local store. They had a 6 Plus there, and they ordered it and went in and picked it up. And they said, yeah, I just kind of walked past all the, you know, people waiting in line who had been there since the wee hours of the morning, and I went in and I picked up my phone.
feels kind of mean almost.
So that's a good thing for people to know, but it is a little bit hidden. I noticed when you go on the website and you're in the store, there's like this, it's just like a little kind of not hidden, but it's just sort of doesn't jump out at you kind of link that says check availability. And then you click on that, and then it'll show you, you know, all the stores you put in your zip code. And if you're lucky like me and have a few near you, that's a good thing. If you only have one, then you kind of roll the dice with that. But
people standing in line on Saturday or Sunday, I honestly found myself a bit confused. And I don't know in that line, like, how many people had already ordered and were there doing the pickup as opposed to people who were just kind of hoping to get an iPhone.
They have separate lines, so.
Right, and I didn't pay attention to which one was which while I was there, unfortunately. But people, I don't understand, like, did people really not know that they were going to get an iPhone on Saturday? And maybe that's weird to me because I know, like, I know that my next iPhone will be in September of 2017, more than likely, or 2016, excuse me, more than likely because I'm on that first cycle and my wife gets the new phone the following year, right?
Right.
And I might be a little tied into this whole thing, I'll grant you that, but then when Apple had their event on the 9th of September, I would think that people at that point would have decided, or they would have read some reviews, or they would have something, you know, leading up to it. The Saturday thing just kind of throws me because it's sort of like who's getting in line that day? who hadn't known that they were going to at that point and then deciding, yeah, I'm gonna. And good for them. I mean, that's really neat, but I just found myself kind of like a tiny bit surprised at all the people standing in line as if this was not an expected thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, David, and you have yours on order, if I'm correct, a plus. But you were saying earlier you were at the Apple Store today. So were there still people hanging around trying to get phones? You were later in the day, so I would imagine all that was gone.
I was in the evening, so I don't know what they're doing. I know that stock is constrained on the bigger ones, but I don't know what the availability is on the little ones. I know when I was at the store, I overheard someone talking to a customer saying, yeah, we've got some iPhone 6 is in stock, so apparently they're not, you know, blowing out in Irvine, California every morning. So, but the pluses, I think, are definitely constrained. And I don't even know whether I ordered the right one or not. I kind of went in just to play with them to see what I thought. Did you guys both just go with the 6?
I'm 6 Plus. And,
okay.
And I am, I am very close to deciding to take it back, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then one more thing today kind of that started surfacing today kind of got me concerned.
Let me guess, the bendy iPhones?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and because especially my preferred location for my phone is my front pocket, and granted it's been fine, or I shouldn't say fine, it's been okay, but it's been hot here, so I've been wearing shorts. So it's not like I have, you know, tighter pockets, but when we get into winter in jeans, you know, I don't even wear tight jeans. I wear old man jeans. So I have pretty spacious pockets. And actually, I did wear some jeans the other night. I went to a concert and it was okay, but it's tight. in there. You know, like it doesn't have a lot of room. And if you sit down with it in your pocket, it certainly, for me, was sort of putting some pressure, you know, on my legs. So I could imagine if you had even tighter jeans or smaller pockets or something like that, and you had your phone in there and sat down. Yeah, it's aluminum. It could, you know, it's a big piece of aluminum. You know,
yeah.
There's probably the ability to flex it. And I don't think this is exclusive to Apple. I think some of the Samsung phones have a similar, you know, Red have a similar issue. It's just, you know, materials. I always keep saying a lot of this stuff comes back to science. And I have to keep reminding myself that, like, I was talking about, they immediately started doing, you know, drop tests started showing up online, like, day one, right? And you're seeing screens, glass screens shatter as they're being dropped onto concrete. And my first thought was, shouldn't glass get, you know, it's supposed to get better over time. We're supposed to have Gorilla Glass 3 or 4 or whatever version we have. But it seems like every year, drop test, it shatters. Then you think, well, yeah, dummy, physics, science, it's glass versus concrete.
Yeah, concrete usually wins.
Yeah, this is just, you know, if you don't want to shatter your screen, you make it out of, you know, Lexan or something like that, but then it's not as clear and it scratches. So, you know, what do you prefer? I think glass is a better choice because scratched plastic, if you're like me and have glasses with plastic lenses, you know what that's like. The things get all scratched up and you're pocket or what have you. So
it's the first iPod Nano all over again.
Yeah, and guess what? Aluminum, malleable metal. Wouldn't you know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It bends.
You mean aluminium?
Yeah, aluminium, exactly. But you know, at the same time, it's just to me, I'm not sure that some of the size advantages are outweighing the sort of day-to-day utility of it. And I think what kind of got me the most is the width of the thing, you know, using it one-handed. I can use it one-handed, especially with the whole reachability mode thing. You know, mm-hmm. that's fine, and I'm kind of getting used to that. But typing on the keyboard one-handed with my thumb, I can't get... My thumb is not maybe... And I don't think I have super small hands. I think I have normal hands, that they're not large or small. But I can't get my thumb... I can get my thumb barely over to, you know, the 1, 2, 3 button, which I think is the furthest on the bottom left. But it's a stretch. It's not comfortable. You know, it's not an easy maneuver to do, which makes typing not kind of fun.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think we were both asking the same question. I mean, you didn't have a chance to really look into it before you bought one, right? You just ordered the night they were released.
Correct. Yeah. And I really kind of bought it because, and I can't remember if I talked about this on my show or not, but I've talked about it on a couple shows. What put me over the top was the sort of iPad-like UI, especially in landscape mode of some of the built-in apps and things like that. And I'm figuring developers are going to start to take advantage of that as well. So that's my only hesitation in sort of not returning it immediately is developers really haven't optimized their apps for the larger screen yet, or a lot of them haven't, I guess a few have. But, you know, having that more iPad-like interface, because I gave up my iPad mini and went with an iPad Air because I went, oh, I have a phone and I really want something larger that I can actually do work on. I can take notes and do things. And I thought maybe with the 6 Plus, with that sort of split screen mode, it might become this thing where if I don't want to take my iPad that, you know, one or two times, and there's occasionally times where I'm like, I don't want to have to take the iPad on the iPhone. I'm not going to be out that long, but I might want to do some notes. I might want to read some articles. And so I thought it might fill in. And I think it could do a really good job, but it's just now using it day to day, I don't know if some of the disadvantages I'm experiencing sort of outweigh those advantages, if that makes any sense.
I have a question to ask about the typing thing. Did you end up trying any of the swipe keyboards, Swift keys, swipe, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm so much faster with the built-in keyboard.
Really?
You know, there'd be a learning curve on that. And I'm sure it might flip around at some point. And I've played around. I had Flesky for a while because Allison Sheridan recommended that to me. And that's actually a really amazing predictive typing keyboard. It's not one of the swipey ones, but it's sort of like one of the ones where you just type, you really don't look at the keys, and you can just, you know, sort of mash your hand against the screen and it magically types what you want it to type.
Yeah.
And it's cool, but I've gotten so used to, I mean, I've been using the iPhone keyboard or the iOS keyboard rather for so long now that, you know, I'm pretty quick at it. I mean, I can type stuff out pretty fast. And more these days, I use dictation, which is even faster.
Exactly. Okay. Me too. But
see, because the reason I was asking you about the SwiftKey thing is because I've been amazed how it doesn't feel like my fingers are going anywhere near the letters I should be typing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's coming out with the word I wanted. So if I had a problem of not being able to reach it, I think I probably told you, I think I talked to you Friday night when I had my phone and said that I felt like maybe the keyboard was a little bit too big.
Yeah.
I'm already over it. I mean, but that's only on the 6. It's not on the 6 Plus.
Yeah, see,
I did go to the Apple store and played with the 6 Plus a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And of the two, I'm pretty convinced that I got the one that's right for me with the 6. Because the 6 Plus just feels, I mean, I love the size of the screen, you know, for doing anything besides, you know, text input or making phone calls or things like that. But that's mostly what I use my phone for. And you know, that's easy for me because I work from home. So, I mean, I've always got my iPad and my computer and my other computer and my television. And there's plenty of screens in my life. Right. So I really don't need, you know, I don't need that bigger one for those, you know, 15 minutes I go to walk the dog.
I mean, and it's amazing for movies, you know, for watching video. It's unbelievable. It's also amazing for, I used it when I drove up to this concert for navigation. And I sort of propped it up in this little, you know, sort of, I have a little pop-up thing in my dash that I've, you know, it's like for your sunglasses and stuff like that. But it's got this sort of lid to it. And I sort of wedged it between the lid and the edge and put it right up center on my dash with the navigation. And that was incredible too. You know, it's like, this is totally like integrated built-in GPS in my car and I can see it. And I am enjoying that. And I'm getting older. I wear glasses and I'm starting to have to, you know, do the whole take, because I use them for, I'm nearsighted, so for seeing far away, and I'm having to take them off to look at my iPhone screen. So with this screen, you know, that does help. But again, all of those things, I think for just sort of my day-to-day usage and what I do with it, I think the other size is going to be much more comfortable for me. So I'm kind of regretting, because I do like the size of the screen. The thing I'm going to absolutely miss the most is the battery life. I had it, you know, running all day doing my normal stuff that I normally do. And I think at the end of the day, I was about 70%, maybe 75% battery life.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And normally I would be down to below 50, maybe 30, 40% on a, you know, that's not a heavy use day. So I know for things like Macworld where I'm really using it heavily, I would love that extra battery because I bet you it would get me through an entire day at Macworld without having to pull out my, you know, battery pack from Monoprice and plug in or be searching for a wall outlet. So,
you know, I'm definitely in the category of people that could benefit from that bigger screen. Quite often I'm on my phone all day and I don't have easy access to an iPad just with my job and I'm running around and the extra battery life and I have, you know, it's not bifocals now, they're called blended lenses that makes you feel better. With the existing iPhone there, you know, honestly, it's getting to the point where I either have to use the, you know, the feature to make the text bigger or there's emails that I just can't really read. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, if I hold it far away, I can see the text or I bring it in or put my reading glasses on. It's just, the whole thing is goofy. And that's kind of what made me think, well, you know what, maybe I'll just get the big one and just accept, you know, life and just deal with that. But but then I see people walking around with it in their pocket saying that it got bent in, you know, driving on a 4-hour trip, it bent. And I'm not sure that's true or not. And But and the good news is you get 2 weeks, you know, if you get one of these. And I, like you, ordered it sight unseen. I said, well, let's just try it. I knew that the big one was going to be supply constrained. So I said, I might as well get it. I'm a total geek. There's no way I could wait 3 months. And I'll know probably within a few days of it arriving whether it's the right phone for me or not. And if it's not, I think the 6s are pretty available. I could always return it and get $100 back. So
I think the bending thing is a really edge case. I haven't looked into it too much, but I think this is a really non-issue. Just I don't want to be freaking people out right
now. Yeah, exactly. It's Apple thing. So if anybody can find something to add gate to the end, right? So
bend gate.
Right. Yeah, it's not like people are picking them up and they're bending in their hand. I mean, they can bend them in their hands. Like somebody had a video. Like a video shows a guy bending an iPhone with his bare hands. I'm like, well, duh. I mean, when I was 4, I think, my mom told me that the crayons that she had bought me were unbreakable. So, of course, I tried it, and it broke right off in my hand. And I thought, you know, wow, I must be super strong. And it turns out, you know, she then had to explain to me the nuance of marketing of like, yeah, okay, no, it's not. If you use it normally, it's unbreakable. So it's not like, you know, it's not like these iPhones are like just bending and like when you pick it up to make a phone call or something.
Years ago, I had in the day job, I'm a lawyer, and I had this case. Well, it wasn't really a case. It was like a business representation. The guy had the unpoppable ball or something, unbreakable. It was not unbreakable. I forget what term I've already used, but it was a ball that kids could play with that wouldn't, you know, get punctured. Mm-hmm. And he was doing an infomercial on it, and he brought it in to show me because it was just so hilarious. He gave it to a little kid, and he says, here it is, the unpoppable ball or whatever. And they were at the beach, and the kid immediately threw it into the fire pit, and it exploded. It was just the greatest thing ever.
Popped it. All right.
The mostly unpoppable ball.
Yeah, I mean, just like the kid immediately just took it and threw it in the fire. Boom.
Yeah. You know, what I think I'm learning with having the larger iPhone is that there's a real specific person, and I think there's a real specific use case for it. And I think what I'm coming to discover is just like I thought before it even came out, I'm probably not that demographic. You know, and I was lured by the optical image stabilization and, like I said, the UI and some of the other features. But I think they're panning out for me not to be enough of a difference. But for you, David, it does sound like it might be the case, especially, you know, I think the large screen, if I didn't have the option to have my iPad with me, you know, or just, you know, whatever it might be, yeah, I think I would really, that would push it back the other direction for me. And like I said, that's why my only hesitation is that some of the third-party apps, you know, aren't optimized. So I was going to mention too, even with my eyesight stuff, I do not like, I played around with the zoomed versus non-zoomed mode. I don't like the zoomed mode that kind of makes everything bigger. And as a matter of fact, apps that aren't optimized yet, I think kind of default to the zoomed mode or something like the zoomed mode. So they just look chunky and everything looks big right now. And that's turning me off a little bit too. But I know that'll be fixed.
That was my feeling on it. Although Michael LaPlante, who's doing iChart Radio with me, mm-hmm. Tells me that I need to leave that on for a couple of hours. He thinks I'll be happier if I just, you know, leave it on for a little bit. But I'm happier mm-hmm. getting my glasses, honestly, because it looks good. When it's in normal or standard view or whatever you call it, I get the feeling that everything is as it should be.
Right.
Whereas when I see the zoom thing, it's like, it reminds me of a 1X, 2X on an iPad.
Yeah. I mean, I even went in and cranked down the dynamic type a little bit. So just so that Apple's apps would, you know, be a little bit smaller on the larger screen. So
I am. When I went into the store, I immediately picked up the 6 Plus because that's the one I have on order. And I just wanted to see what it was like. And my initial reaction was, this is a monstrosity, but it's a beautiful screen. You know, is it a beautiful monstrosity? And I don't know. I mean, holding it in my hand, it was fine. Typing on it in portrait mode, actually, I was much more effective than I am on the little iPhone that I have now. I guess we call it a little. That's kind of funny. But then later, I picked up the standard iPhone 6, and it immediately felt better in my hand. I mean, it's palpable to me, at least, when you pick it up. It's like, oh, okay, here's an iPhone again. So
that was the next thing I wanted to ask specifically Ken about. But now, David, since you were in the store with both, I'll start with you. Did you have a chance to get the two screens side by side? Because, like I said, the iPhone 6 Plus screen is gorgeous. And if I get close enough, I think I can, you know, kind of see the difference between my 5S and the 6 Plus. But I'm kind of curious, you know, I want to get into the store and get the two, see if I can get the two side by side so I can see, you know, how does the 6 Plus screen compare to the 6 screen? Are they that noticeably different, or are they both just gorgeous? I mean, my sense is that they're going to be both gorgeous displays. And really, it's only the pixel density that's slightly different.
I could not tell any difference. I know that the 6 Plus has higher density, but I could not see any difference.
Right. And then so the secondary thing that was more for you, Ken, is has there been any, because I mean the 4.7 is obviously bigger than the 4. So did you have I don't even remember which phone you had before. Did you have a 5S or a 5?
I actually had a 5S because when the screen on my 5 broke, I ended up getting it replaced, and they didn't have any fives, so they gave me a 5S.
Oh, very
so
nice.
five, 5S, and 6 will be the first time. Is the only time.
So have you
noticed, actually done the progression each, you know, for each one?
Have you noticed any weirdness or awkwardness in transitioning from the 5S to the 6?
No, only the size. If you mean screen wise, no.
Like, I mean, is it obvious? I mean, does it obviously feel bigger? Like, I remember when first got the 4-inch screen. You know, it took a couple weeks. It was a little bit awkward. You know, there was that little transition, and like this experience moving to the 6 Plus is like that times 10 for me. You know, it's like, oh my god, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, this, I mean, this, there's definitely a change. I mean, the way it feels in your hand, I'm amazed at how light it is. Mm-hmm. I have not gotten my permanent case for it yet, whatever the permanent case is going to be, because I didn't have any case on my iPhone 5, which is why I ended up having to pay a deductible and getting an iPhone 5S, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once I did that, because I didn't want to buy the same phone for a third time, I ended up putting it in an OtterBox, which was great for the ruggedness, but you know, it increases the bulk considerably.
That's not a thin case.
Yeah. So, yes, when I pick this up, I mean, it's definitely got a. I mean, just holding it. I mean, literally, just holding it is. I don't want to say more difficult, but I can't do it the way I used to. Well, I will say more difficult. It's not like it's a hardship or anything like that. Again, Mike actually finds it more difficult to hold on to because the size combined with the brushed aluminum, he feels like the, you know, it's like they just buttered the thing up before they.
Yeah. and the rounded corners.
The rounded corners are nice. I like that. Yeah,
that also makes it more slippery.
True.
That's true. What's funny is I've actually got, Eric Hofstetter, I talked about him on another show that I was on, months ago, went to an opening of an Apple store, I believe, down around Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And he was kind enough to send me the T-shirt, which is very nice of him because I wasn't there. I've actually never been to an opening of an Apple store, a brand new Apple store. So it was nice of him to send me the shirt. But then he also sent me this, you know, goofy case that was like supposedly for the next iPhone. And it was 4.7 inches. And if you look at it, it had the, you know, the place where you could do the vibration thing on the left side, and it had the power button. It's like on the right side, and this thing is just goofy. It's not going to be like that. And of course, the thing fits like a glove. So I've actually had a case for the iPhone 6 in my house for months, it turns out. And so that's the one that I'm kind of using right now, all of which is the reason I bring that up is because it's kind of the silicone case. It's more plasticky than silicone, I think, but it keeps it from sliding and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, there is still definitely a. I mean, it feels very different in my hand. It's much more difficult to make sure you've got a firm grasp on it, especially if you're like, you know, I'm walking down the street again, walking the dog with one hand and texting with the other, not looking where either of us are going. So really, you'll find me in the news one day, I feel certain. But yeah, it's not quite as. The screen is gorgeous, but it's I don't feel like I have as much control over the device itself in a way.
Yeah. And, you know, to Ken's point, the 6 is quite a bit bigger than the existing phone.
Exactly,
so, yeah. I mean, the problems I'm complaining about are probably satisfied by the 6 too. Yeah. I don't know. I after tonight, I'm less sure of myself than I was before. But, you know, the statement I said earlier was, you know, it's like a tattoo. It's not like a tattoo. It's not like you're going to be stuck with this for life. You get a phone, in a year or two, you get a new phone. So,
yeah,
it's nothing of the world.
The iPhone 9 is going to be a tattoo, by the way.
Yeah,
that just that would be cool. That just makes me wishy-washy, David. You know
what?
That just ends up making me wishy-washy because I've thought that exact same thing. You know, with the 6 Plus, it's like you weenie, just stick it out for a year. You know, but then again, I just picked up my 5S, which was sitting on the desk here, and it feels like so comfortable and like you know, like a good old worn. You know, hat or something like that, you know, that all just right. kind of fits and works.
I really have trouble reading my 5S. I'm looking forward to something bigger. So,
all right. So let me ask a question. When I was, after the event happened, I was talking with, back and forth on, Twitter with Ben Beharin and asked him if the 6 Plus is geared towards Asia. And his answer was absolutely. The 6 Plus is geared towards Asia. Yeah. I mean, is that really what this is then? I mean, because we don't think about Apple devices being for developing markets because they tend to be price. What's the word I'm looking for? They're too expensive.
Well,
they're too expensive for a lot of emerging markets. I mean, like the people who can afford an iPhone in China, can probably also afford, you know, like we do here in the West, where they got a phone, they got a computer, they got whatever. Whereas if you go to someplace like Indonesia or India or something like that, they're looking for a tablet that also has phone functionality or a phone that also has tablet functionality, because there's a pretty good chance that that's what they're going to be able to afford, at least for the foreseeable future, right?
Yeah.
And so it's weird to think that the 6 Plus would actually be aimed at a country or countries that love the idea of a converged device, because if they could afford this, then they could actually afford, heck, 3 or 4 of other kinds of devices and solve the problem in a different way that way.
Right. Well, I think what proves his theory was what we saw in launch day lines, especially in some of the bigger cities like New York and stuff like that, you know, which was a bunch of, I think Asian, you know, mostly Asian people buying multiple phones and then handing them off to other people. Well, I guess you could get 2, right? And then days later, we're hearing about seizures of massive quantities of smuggled iPhones showing up in China and Hong Kong. And, you know, so where do you think those phones came from?
Yeah.
Right. That again, though, that's not quite the same thing, right? I mean, you always had a gray market going into China until last year, because there were people who had a lot of money and who wanted an iPhone. And so the people who are taking those phones in China right now are the same people. I mean, they're the people like here who stood in line that first day.
Right.
And the people like us who, yeah, we could afford this and we wanted to have it right away. That again, is going to be somebody who wants the status of having a new iPhone, as opposed to somebody who's saying, ah, this one device will solve all of these problems and at a price I can afford. Right? Well,
yeah, but I think it's affordable when you compare it to, you know, that's the one device they're going to have. So they're not going to have a laptop, right? What you're saying. You know, they're not going to have a laptop. They're not going to have a tablet. They're going to have an iPhone 6 Plus, and that's their computer. That's their connection. That's their device.
I don't know, though, that I would necessarily call that affordable. I mean, what, India just hit 1 million, I think, wasn't it? It just hit 1 million iPhones. And that's with most of them selling like in the 4S range, right?
I don't really keep up with that, so I don't. Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, you're probably more on top of it than I am.
Oh, but, sorry.
But I mean, that sounds right. I mean, I don't think that's a big leap to, and I'm sure you have the data to back it up, but I mean, I'm willing to accept that.
Unfortunately not on me. So I should stop going in that direction. Forgive me. I apologize. It's weird to think, when I was thinking about that, the possibility that the 6 Plus could actually be the converged device for an emerging market, the next thing I thought was, well, it can't really be that for another couple of years, though, right? Mm. Because right now, the 4, 4S, maybe the 5C are starting to be sort of an affordable device for emerging markets. And so we're still looking at another year or two before the 6 Plus, assuming they keep the 6 Plus around. I mean, and as opposed to just, okay, we'll replace the 6 Plus with the 7 Plus, right? And so if they keep the 6 Plus and then bounce it down the line the way they did with the 5C this year, then it becomes that affordable device, but it's still another couple of years before that happens. And that's sort of a crazy idea to think about. Like, could Apple be targeting emerging markets with this device, but for 2 years from now, when, you know, the price of making them is down low enough and when they have the new enough phone that they could sell that one for that lower amount of money that actually does hit a sweet spot for people, who don't have a lot in the way of money.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's just something I was thinking about. I got nothing to back that up.
It's an interesting thing to think about, and I think I buy into it. You know, I think it is what's happening over there. But I don't know that the device was just made for them. I mean, there was huge demand in the U.S. market too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for a larger phone. You know, there's a whole, and like I said, I think it's a very specific segment of the market that wants a Galaxy Note size thing. I think I was reading today too that because of the iPhone 6, you know, whether this is true or not, that or 6 Plus, that Samsung bumped up the next version of the Galaxy is the Note 4. I guess by a couple weeks. So they were going to launch in November, and they've bumped it into October release because they saw the number of phones that Apple sold, and they're worried about losing sales, so they're going to rush it into market, which is interesting.
What could go wrong?
Right? I don't know how they're going to... I thought all the supplies for, you know, displays and all that stuff was sort of locked up, too, by Apple. So I don't know where they're getting, you know, components and parts. And a lot of those factories seem to be churning out iPhone parts.
Or how they're going to get them here. There was a story a couple of weeks ago that Apple had locked up all the shipping.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy idea, too.
So...
Well, just while you guys were talking, you know, for my backup plan, for my plan B, I was just looking around. All the local Apple stores have sixes in stock.
Yeah.
In Orange County, California. So it's like, I think that if you get the 6 Plus, just be aware you have 2 weeks. And if it's too much, then you can always get a little smaller one.
Yeah. And I forgot I should have mentioned to people specifically, I wanted to point out how you do that. So if you go on Apple's online site and you just start adding a, you know, iPhone 6 to your cart, down at the bottom, they kind of have this little panel, and there's the big green select button, you know, once you've picked all your choices. But over to the left, there's an available for pickup check availability link. And that was what I was talking about. You might miss it. And that'll give you a little pop-up where you can search for a local Apple store and see what the stocks are like. So if anybody wants to follow up and do that.
Hey, let's talk about Apple Pay.
You want to talk about Apple Pay or iOS 8? Let's do Apple Pay.
All right.
Sure.
It's not out yet, but I think that may be
the
bigger deal.
Are you excited about it?
I just think it may be the bigger deal. When I talk to my Muggle friends who aren't really into this stuff.
Really?
It's kind of a thing. I mean, people are like, oh, yeah, I mean, Apple's going to let me get rid of my credit cards.
Did you tell them they have to buy a new iPhone?
Yeah, of course.
That was the one. Listeners to my show know that I was on a big kick saying that there was no way Apple was going with an NFC solution unless, although I did say unless they were somehow forced by the credit card companies, which I think is what happened in this case. I think, you know, I don't know that it was Apple's first choice, but I think it was sort of like the credit card companies went, look, we've got all these payment terminals out there. They support this kind of technology. You know, I think that was in. And I still held out that Apple wouldn't, you know, that it's not historically Apple wouldn't cave to that sort of thing. They would say, no, we're doing what we think is the future thing, not the old thing. And going with the, you know, Bluetooth Low Energy, I thought it was going to be Bluetooth Low Energy, iBeacon sort of based system. Which is funny because that's what, was it Best Buy and Walmart are using some sort of Bluetooth system. And so they're not opting in for Apple Pay. Which is ironic, too, because Best Buy has the little Apple stores inside Best Buy, but they're not going to take Apple Pay, so that just kind of blows my mind. Oh, no, it wasn't Target, right? Walmart, sorry, I said Target. Target is supporting Apple Pay. Walmart and Best Buy. Which is just interesting. So I had fully thought that was the route they were going to go, so I was sort of surprised by the NFC thing. And one of my reasonings for Apple not doing NFC was that NFC was going to require people to upgrade their device in order to use the platform, which severely limits, you know, they've got 800,000 iTunes accounts with credit cards, but they're not going to have, yeah, granted they sold 10 million iPhones. So I guess maybe that's still a good enough sample for them to start Apple Pay with. And maybe they want to do it slowly, but I would have thought they wanted Apple Pay to be available to anybody with an iPhone and, you know, with low energy Bluetooth in it. And that's a lot of iPhones that are already out in the market.
I didn't understand that the antenna was the problem. It was the security of having the enclave on the chip where you can embed the credit card data and not have it available to hackers. I thought that was the big deal with putting it on the 6 only.
No. Well,
that's
maybe.
NFC. Yeah. I mean, that may play into it as well, but I mean, even if they had that somehow, they could put that on the 5C or the 5S.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the NFC antenna, so it's not going to work, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, in the 5C and 5S, I mean, they do have the, maybe it's fairly limited, but you do have the secure, because I guess the chip on the 6 is new that's going to store the Apple Pay information, right? It's not the same chip that stores your thumbprint data for Touch ID.
That's how I understand it. I mean, I'm not definitely not an expert on it, but as I understand it, I think they call it the secure enclave, or they have some other name for it. But there's a section of the chip that's in silicon. It's not in software.
Yeah, I think the secure enclave is the thing that's in the A7, A8 for the Touch ID. But yeah, they had another name for it. You're absolutely right. There's like another chip now that's going to store that data. I don't know why they couldn't use the same chip, which was a little weird to me.
Well, is it a different chip or is it just a different section of the same chip?
Maybe it's
chip?
Different marketing. Who knows?
Yeah. Let me ask a question. Do you feel like it was the credit card companies that sort of leaned on Apple, or do you think Apple waited to do NFC until Apple had a full solution? And the joke that I made on macOS, Ken, was we've been hearing rumors of NFC in the next iPhone pretty much since the iPhone 3G, right?
Right.
And so it's always been something that people waited for, to the point that, like you earlier this year, I was saying no, absolutely not. In fact, Ming-Chi Kuo in like February, I think, did his whole here's what's coming from Apple for the year. And one of the things he talked about was the fact the next iPhone would have NFC. And yep. I was like, okay, sometimes he hits and sometimes he misses, and that feels like a definite miss. And then as we started hearing the rumors about the pay stuff, and the NFC rumor just became, there was a different pitch to it this year. I mean, I can't really explain it any better than that, but it sort of started to feel like, okay, yeah, this time it's doable. It's not definite, but I can definitely see how it could be this time. And then the fact that Apple, the one thing that I'm wondering is, did Apple hold off on doing NFC because Apple wasn't interested in slotting itself into other people's payment plans? Were they waiting until they had, you know, enough critical mass that they could say, hey, we got a payment system, and of course you're going to jump on because look who we are, which turns out to have been the case. There was some analyst I was reading, sort of skimmed over it, and he basically just wrote a note that he was just amazed that there was, I think MasterCard had its, or whatever is behind MasterCard, had its investor day. And the entire hour 15, whatever, Q&A was people asking about Apple Pay. Wow. Not asking about MasterCard's business, not asking about, you know, other parts of MasterCard, not asking, so how you been? Everybody wanted to talk about Apple Pay. I mean, so it's, I mean, I kind of wonder if that's, if it was not that, you know, credit card companies, excuse me, leaned on Apple to put in NFC, but if Apple just decided, okay, we can actually do this now and we can do it the way we want to, as opposed to having to be forced by anybody to do anything.
Yeah. I'm laughing because the second part that's amazing to that about me too is Apple's ability to take a standardized technology and claim it as their own.
Yeah.
So it's not NFC anymore. It's Apple Pay. They did, you know, like Apple suddenly is the company that invented, you know, tap to pay systems, or, you know, they've done it with Lightning, you know, connector, which is a standardized connector. They did it with FireWire, you know, IEEE 1394 connector that anybody could use, but everybody knows it as FireWire.
Right? We have this new technology we're going to introduce, and we call it Blu-ray. Oh, Blu-ray, you say. Tell me more.
It makes a lot of sense, though, for them to get into this whole thing, because I'm sure they're going to monetize it and do fine, but when you look at the numbers of zeros and the money they make, I'm not sure how important the monetization is. I think more important is just that, you know, delivering that solution. People who buy the $600 iPhones are going to start using it, and they are going to be very hesitant to switch to any other platform once they get used to that. And boy, what a lock-in device that's going to be.
It's a killer app.
I think it's almost bigger than the fact that they'll make money off the transactions. It's just huge for them. And I was thinking, because my brother-in-law, he's very much into Android, and every time I see him, he wants to talk about it. And I don't know why, because I usually don't bring it up. But he says, well, we're going to get that on Android too, right? And I said, well, I would think that the software part wouldn't be hard, but I don't know how easy it's going to be to get the hardware manufacturers and Google all on the same page. I'm sure they'll figure it out, but Apple controlling the whole widget makes it a lot easier for them to come to the banks and say, here it is.
That's an interesting thing too, though, because, you know, is this one of those technologies like iCloud for Windows or some of the other things that Apple has done where eventually this does get open to other platforms?
Well, I don't know that it needs to be the Apple. It's an NFC secure payment method. I mean, you don't need Apple devices in the store. So I don't see why other platforms couldn't come up with something similar that has nothing to do with Apple Pay.
Right. Right. Other than, you know, it starts to get crowded on the little terminal when you're throwing, you know, 27 logos up there or whatever, because you got to have the bank ones that they already have, which is like PayPass, and now you're going to have Apple Pay and, you know, some other thing, Android, wallet or whatever they're going to call it.
But I do wonder, think... Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was going to say, you kind of wonder, though, what's going to be the tipping point for a lot of Android people. I have a friend who has an Android phone, and she... I sent her a link to something in iTunes one time, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, you don't. And she was like, oh, of course I use iTunes. It's just I can't remember what app it is that she uses. But she uses some app that will go and... No.
Something like
no,
that.
No, it might be... I think Google Play might have done something now that makes it work better or something. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, I mean, so there are people out there who are still using some of the Apple technology but not using the Apple hardware. And so I would think, honestly, that Apple would not be interested in having Apple Pay specifically be on anything but Apple's hardware because... As you say, David, they're not making a lot of money on each transaction. Now, that's also like that thing where they used to say, we're running iTunes at break even. I mean, they don't say that anymore because at some point that changed. And, you know, if everybody really starts using all of their iOS devices for their payments, then that will become real money even for Apple at some point, or at least it could become real money for Apple at some point. But, I mean, what it really is about is selling the iPhone. Making sure that the next time you go out to buy an iPhone or buy a phone, excuse me, that, you know, you're thinking about the convenience that you get with that and the free music that you get with whatever they're going to turn Beats into, and you get to look cool, and, you know, you probably don't need the one that's 5.5 inches across. Just go with the 4.7.
Right. And the other way they open it up, I guess, to maybe other consumers, although, again, I guess it's tied to the iPhone, so maybe this isn't the case, but, you know, you've got the Apple Watch too that's going to support Apple Pay.
Yeah, but that is tied directly to the iPhone. That's actually kind of a weird thing.
The payment part, though, I don't know if it's been made clear if I don't have my iPhone with me, am I not able to use Apple Pay or am I?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
You know, I would think they would want a system that, in that case, wouldn't require that you have your iPhone with you. Because people are going to forget their device.
We only heard Tim Cook say explicitly, I think, on the Charlie Rose interview, that you're going to be able to go running without your iPhone. Because Charlie Rose asked him about that. He said, so you have to have an iPhone. And Tim Cook said, yes. And then he said, well, I mean, no. Like, if you're going running and you want to leave your phone at home, your Apple Watch still has music on it. So you'll be able to listen to music while you're out running, even if you don't have your phone.
Well, and you'll I think you can also get the, because it's going to have a little chip like the whatever, and track your steps and counts and stuff like that. What you will miss out on is, say, GPS, which it won't have.
Right. Well, and emails and text messages and all the other stuff that people like their smartwatches for.
If you're running,
you
probably don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm just, in the running scenario, I think it will track, your run step count and your heartbeat and all those sorts of things and sort of store it locally. And then when you get back to your phone, sync it all back into the health app and all that stuff.
So then doesn't that mean that Apple Pay can't work unless you do have your iPhone on you? Because, I mean, it's obviously that the Apple Watch is not going to have a connection to your credit information.
Well, it'll have NFC, card account. Right? So, your credit card data is stored in the little chip on, the secure chip on the phone.
Right, but it won't know if you just maxed out your card someplace else.
Wouldn't the vendor?
Good point.
The terminal would be able to transmit that information, I would think, right?
You're right. Good point that. Huh.
I heard one person who was at the event tell me that they understood that it would work, that you could do Apple Pay. In fact, what she told me was that little button to do the contacts also does Apple Pay.
Yeah, that's the confirmation. So, I found a really good article that described the full process, and I covered this in the last MacCast for both devices, so Apple Pay, the whole experience from the time you walk into the retail all the way through checkout. And with the watch, because on the phone, what happens is, you tap the phone and then it'll say, oh, okay, you want to pay with this amount. And then you do the Touch ID thing, right? So you put your thumbprint to sort of authorize and say, yes, I actually want to make this payment. So there's kind of that checks and balances in there. So it's just so somebody can't do like a drive-by, NFC thing, because that's one of the problems with NFC currently. If you have a card in your wallet that has the chip, someone could get close enough to you with a reader and, trigger that transaction. And it's one of the reasons why current touch-to-pay systems are usually limited in terms of the transaction amount, because there's no signing, no PIN. So it's usually between $30 to $50 limit. They won't let you tap to pay more than that. And so Touch ID really gets around that, because now what happens is you tap it and then it'll say, oh, you want to pay X amount on your Apple Pay, and then you Touch ID to commit to that transaction. Obviously, the watch doesn't have a Touch ID, so the way they're getting around it there is you tap, the amount comes up, and then you have to press and hold that that button on the watch to sort of confirm and say, yes, I absolutely want this transaction to go through. That makes sense.
Let's talk about the watch for a minute.
Yeah, the watch.
Yeah, the have you guys read the John Gruber piece about the high-end costs, you know?
The pricing is all over the place. The speculation on the pricing, and I hope most of the stuff I'm hearing is wrong. I had lunch with, or breakfast rather, with Rod Roddenberry this morning, and we were talking about that. And, you know, my initial thought when I heard the starting price at $349 was I figured it'd be $349 for, and that's the Apple Sport. It's pretty clear that that's the Sport Edition watch, which is aluminum case with INX glass. So basically same materials as you have in the iPhone. And I think you can get the polymer band. There might be some leather band options that I'm sure would up the price a little bit. But I think, you know, the polymer band, the aluminum casing, and the INX glass, that's the $349 sort of version. And then the next step up would be the Apple Watch, which is moves you to a stainless steel case, which is more like I think traditional wristwatches would have, stainless steel casing, and the sapphire glass display. And everybody I've talked to who's a watch enthusiast says, you know, most of the, you know, higher end watches are sapphire glass because they don't, it doesn't scratch. And you really don't want, you know, a scratch display on your wristwatch, and you're banging around and doing things. So that's like a big selling point. And then you have the edition, which is going to be the gold and sapphire. But I had kind of figured, you know, $349, if that's the starting point, then maybe the Apple Watch is going to be in the 500-ish range to start. And then maybe the edition starts in the 800-ish range, you know, like $200 to $300 difference between the sort of starting points for those three models. But yeah, Gruber came up with some crazy numbers, right, Dave?
Yeah, well, I mean, his point was it's not going to be like gold plated. It's going to be solid gold, and it's going to be kind of like Rolex pricing, where it's going to be thousands.
Yeah, I can't see Apple pulling that off.
Well, you never know. I mean, it's crazy what people will do.
But at that, with a Rolex, you're talking about an heirloom watch that gets handed down for, you know, three generations.
Three generations
from now, nobody's going to want a gold Apple Edition watch. You know, I mean, it's version like, one.
Can you imagine saying, "Here is my iPod, you know, version one that I cherished my entire life.
Enjoy.
You can give it to your grandchildren." I don't really understand it, but I think if he's right, and the guy, you know.
It has to be wrong.
He has a lot of good contacts, and he's a pretty smart guy. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, he had the Apple Watch. So the next step up from the Sport, he's got it pegged at like $2,000 to start.
Oh, did he? I must have misread that. But you know what? It's I just remember the Elite watch, the Edition watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had that like $5,000 or something.
Yeah, so
like
he was saying $349, then you go all the way to $2,000, and then $5,000.
Like, for something that next year you're going to want the new one, or in 2 years you're going to want the new one.
Right, and yeah. I get, you know, celebrities and prestige, but in fashion, I mean, this is a different market. It's being sold to a sort of different mentality than just tech geeks, but I think if Apple prices it that way, they're betting way too much that, you know, that's going to make mean something to people. And some of the comments we've been hearing from sort of traditional watch people is like, yeah, this is an amazing thing. This Apple's done an incredible job. They've gotten, you know, a lot of things right going into the history and really, you know, understanding watches and the product and stuff like that. But they all have that giant moment of, but, you know, this is a piece of technology. And it's not an heirloom device. It's not, you know, it misses some of these other points that are critical and go into watches that are pure jewelry.
Well, you know? In my mind, I would think that there's lots of people, myself included, that would be interested in an Apple Watch at the lowest price tier, mm-hmm. with the knowledge that I'm not going to be, keeping it. I'm a geek. I'm going to be upgrading at some point. And so, I mean, when I heard that it starts at $349, I'm thinking that's probably exactly where I'm going to be, or just slightly more than that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there are people out there that would like nothing better than to spend $15,000 on an Apple Watch because they can and so many people can't. But my thought about it is, what does that do to the Apple brand itself? I mean, does it, by becoming, that elitist, I guess that's the right word, are you jeopardizing the relationship with customers that aren't willing to spend that much money? Do they start to say, you know what, Apple's just not for me?
I think not, because of that starting price point. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think, that's going to be the thing that 90% of people, maybe not 90%, but, the largest percentage of people that's the version they're going to get.
If it's $2,000 for the standard Apple Watch, I think it's going to be 90% that are getting the $349.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that just changes your definition of standard, right?
Yeah.
The 349 is going to be the standard.
Yeah.
Especially because people don't know anything about it yet. There are going to be a lot of people who line up that first day, or there are going to be a lot of people. And I wonder if they're going to let you pre-order, or if you're going to have to line up the way you did, initially with the iPhone, the way you did initially with the iPad. Are they going to want the optics of having people line up? Or are they going to be worried that people won't? But either way, I mean, even if Apple is saying that the middle of the road watch is the standard watch, it's going to be the low cost is the one that's going to win the first time around. It seems to me.
Yeah. What fascinates me is how many combinations are possible. And so my initial thought was they're going to have to do all, online, like build to order sort of ordering. And, having these things in a retail store is going to be a freaking nightmare. In terms of, what do you stock, which combinations, which bands, which finishes, I'm really curious to see how they market it. Is it going to be the thing where you buy the base thing and then the bands are an accessory like a case? And right. We don't even know. So maybe for $349, all you get is but it sounded like a band comes included at a certain price and then maybe you can swap bands out. I don't know, so maybe there's some default configurations that are like, this is the stock band with this model. Yeah, I don't even know how they're going to manage that.
Something notice if you look at the Apple Watch site is that with the edition versions of the watch, there are watches with colored crowns that match the bands.
Yeah.
And, and that to me lends credence to the idea that these edition watches are going to be really expensive.
Yeah. Well, what happens when you swap the band? Can you swap that little dot on the crown?
I
asked that on a podcast. I wondered if it was, if it was the kind of thing. It would be totally in Apple's wheelhouse to have that somehow, it's like magnetically attached or, some way that little button is dropped in. And when you get a different strap, you can get a new little end cap to go on that crown so that it's always matched. Doesn't that seem like a detail that Apple would totally think about?
If it's a little piece you can lose, though, then no. Right?
Well, even my initial thought was like, it'd be cool if it was just a little LED or LCD sort of thing that, just you had a setting in the watch and it just changed color.
And it automatically knew which color band you put on it.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine
that they're going
to
have anything.
It's hard for me to imagine that they're going to have anything that's going to be difficult as far as changing the color on that crown, if you can change the color on the crown.
Because it is a digital crown, right?
I don't know. Is it?
Well, that's what they call it, yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, but there were some people who said, actually, I can't remember which review it was, but one of the reviews said they've actually solved problems that watchmakers, like regular watchmakers, haven't been able to solve as far as making the links in a linked watch band shorter. Apparently, just sliding the links out to make them, to size it to your wrist. Mm-hmm. They've actually found ways to make that easier than people have in the past. So, I can't imagine.
Somebody
I can't
put
imagine
Johnny Ive on the project. Yeah, that's the.
And yet, okay. So, can we talk about the design?
Yeah,
sure.
How are we on the design?
I think it obeys the laws of physics.
Yeah. Same war. I'm sorry.
Well, I just think that, you
it's
know,
chunky.
Everybody
is that the, well, I mean, there's chunky a, well, there, for a reason.
There's two pieces. It's boxy and it's chunky.
Right.
And the first thing, I actually wrote a post on this. To me, that the make it or break it element of this is going to be battery life. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to spend $350 on a watch and it shuts down at 4 p.m., I'm not going to be happy. And I think they're fully aware of that. And I think the reason it's as thick as it is they're going to have a battery in there that's going to get it through the whole day.
It's also why they didn't talk about battery life, because I think they're falling very short of where they want to be.
And I don't think that's what they're scrambling to do right now.
Well, I think they're really scrambling to figure out how are we going to make this thing last at least a day, and it ideally should be lasting a couple days.
And then I would say that the reason it's a square is because to display digital data, that's the best shape.
It is a way better shape. I love the Moto 360 design. I think that's mm-hmm. the classic watch face, and I had wished that Apple would come up with a solution for that. But, you know, that does lend itself, as far as, like David said, displaying the actual data that you're going to want on a smartwatch or digital watch, or, you know, digital watch, smartwatch, I guess is a better way to say it. Yeah, it's a much better shape. It makes a lot more sense.
All right.
I mean, I don't disagree.
Well, sure, they had a choice, but I mean, they made the choices that they made for whatever reason. They made the choices they made, but I'm not. It says geek.
Yeah, the 360 is sexier. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and so is the LG. Actually, the LG G. What is it called? It's so stupid. It's LG G Watch R.
That's the round one that they're.
That's
doing.
The round one that does not have the little blank space at the bottom for the light sensor. So the Moto 360 is pretty, but it's got that sort of like it's got that sort of blank. It's got that
the
null
letterbox
spot.
Edge down at the bottom. Yeah,
exactly. Which the LG G Watch R does not have, and it just like looks like you're wearing a watch. Now, granted, it looks like you're wearing a Timex. Doesn't look like you're wearing a Rolex. It looks like you're wearing, you know, a Timex or an Armatron or something like that. A low end of any of those devices. But that said, it just looks like a watch. The Apple Watch is never going to fool anybody that it is a watch. And the thing that amazed me about the design, and I'm not saying I could do better. There are just questions about it. Like all of the faces that they showed, all of the analog watch faces are round. The Mickey Mouse watch is round. The other analog face watches that they showed, and I know, I mean, they have the digital ones where you can, you know, tuck this bit of information here and this bit of information here, and obviously that doesn't look like it's a round watch on a square face,
right?
But all of the watch faces that they showed were round watches on very much a square plane, and it just struck me as kind of weird, especially where you have things like the Moto 360 and the LG G Watch R or whatever it's called. You know, sort of hitting at the same time. I'm not saying it's a fault because, I mean, really what's going to, price is definitely going to be one thing. Battery life is definitely going to be one thing, but function is really going to be the thing. And I kind of hate the fact that we're not going to be able to try it out for any real length of time in our own lives, unless we just do the, you know, the 15-day money back guarantee thing.
Right.
I mean, how, like the functionality of the thing, unless you're just going to start off by using it as a, it's my run keeper. It's my fitness device. And, oh, look, I can also get messages on it. Oh, okay, well, look, I can also do this. If you suddenly start growing uses from whatever your starting point is, whether your starting point is, well, I wanted to spend $1,500 or $1,000 or $5,000 on an Apple Watch because I knew nobody else would, and it turns out I can also text from it. You know, I mean, it feels like your starting point is going to be whatever your starting point is, and then how well it gets adopted past that is how many other things you find to other ways you find to fold it into your life.
Yeah.
Like I got it to be my running buddy, and then I can also pay for stuff while I'm out. And then I, you know, started getting messages, and now it's become a central part of my life.
Okay.
As opposed to, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. So you're actually getting to the sort of the final thing that I think I want to wrap up with, specifically with the Apple Watch, which is, you know, the ultimate test of this thing is, Do either of you wear a watch on a daily basis? Maybe David?
Yeah, I do.
I would think David does. I do not.
I've actually started wearing a watch in preparation for the Apple Watch. No lie.
So
Ken's in training.
So the natural question is, do you guys think, because I bought a Pebble and I wore it for a while. I wore it for several months and it was pretty neat. I got some, you know, it was kind of nice to get some notifications. I enjoyed some of it, but ultimately I stopped wearing it. And what's scary to me is probably the number one reason I stopped wearing it was that charging it was a pain in the butt. And that watch lasts 4 or 5 days before it needs to charge. Granted, I don't think they had, you know, their charging solution that the cable was proprietary. I guess Apple's is going to kind of be proprietary as well. But it never really, it was this weird MagSafe thing and it didn't stick very well. And I would misplace the cables. And so the charging is going to have to be super convenient and easy. And I'm hoping they come up with some good, like, docking station, something that I can keep by my nightstand and just sort of, you know, click it into more of a permanent thing. And maybe the third parties will take care of that. But that was number one. But secondly, there wasn't enough in it to sort of make me want to continue to wear a watch and not have to pull my phone out of the pocket. So the question is, do we think Apple has done enough in that area? Or is this going to be the thing where everybody's going to get this thing? It's going to be the new shiny for about a year, and then they're going to end up in drawers.
That's a really good question. August Trometer actually asked me the same thing.
Yeah,
we were talking about it one day, and he's like, I don't have an answer. I mean, I lost my Fitbit the other day. It's somewhere in the house. I know it's somewhere in the house because it, you know, sent me a message saying I'm cold. There are wolves after me. I got the. It was syncing to my phone, but I can't find it anywhere. And I know I will find it one day. It's dead now, though, so I can't even do the whole, you know, set the alarm and listen for it thing. If you find one thing that you use it for, like, you know, tracking steps or tracking your run or whatever those things are, then, I mean, for those people, it's definitely going to succeed. I think they were right to not make it just a fitness-oriented device. I mean, it's kind of smart to make it a multi-oriented device because then a lot of people can come to it for that one feature, whatever that one feature is, right?
It's funny you mentioned the one feature because the one feature that made me want to wear my Pebble, mm-hmm. oddly enough, somebody wrote a Starbucks app and it had my Starbucks card on there. And so I could pay at Starbucks with my watch. So for me with the Apple Watch, I'm pretty well convinced as long as it's adopted at a lot of the places that I shop.
Yeah.
Apple Pay is going to be one of the killer features for me that could get me to wear that watch again. If I can constantly be able to pay without having to pull my phone out at Starbucks, at wherever I might be, Home Depot, you know, Target, wherever it might be, that could be the killer feature for me. And it sounds so trivial, but it's one of those pain points that just sort of goes away in that system, right? It takes a hassle out of that whole sort of checking out sort of thing.
And then the other thing I would say really quickly about the Apple Watch is while I was just making fun of the fact, and I wasn't really making fun, I was questioning. While I was talking about the fact that it is a square watch, it's infinitely prettier than the Pebble. And I don't mean the people at Pebble any offense. They actually, you might easily say that they're kind of getting Sherlocked on the whole thing, right?
I mean, they pioneered the space. I think they made it a consumer product,
right?
Yeah.
Yes. And thank you very much for playing. And here is your parting gift because I mean, Apple is now positioning themselves to really run the table on it, right? So, I mean, you do have that going for you as well. I mean, there is going to be the weird thing is it's the geekiest looking device, but there's going to be a tremendous cool factor, at least for a little while, with the Apple Watch. Because we're only at the very beginning of the marketing blitz that's going to be coming. I mean, it's going to be, I was joking with somebody, it's going to be Colbert wearing one on the first night when he takes over Late Show. It's going to be, you know, people reading, and the Oscar goes to... from their smartwatch, depending on how early in 2015 it is, or from their Apple Watch, excuse me.
Right.
I mean, we're just at the very beginning of getting people excited about it. We're all excited about it. Honestly, the biggest reason I'm excited about it is because I can finally stop saying Apple's alleged wearable. I'm very excited that after over a year and a half, we can finally call it, Apple Watch, and we know very little about it, but we do know about it. So.
So David, is yours going to be in a drawer in a year?
I don't think so.
A year and a half, I guess, really, we should say.
You know, I look at this thing, and you know, we didn't really have time to talk about iOS 8, but
no, we'll have to iOS 8 do another episode.
Yeah, but you know, the extensions and the things that are going on right now in iOS to me are extremely exciting. It's you know, for someone that does a lot of work from the iOS platform, it feels like they've really opened the floodgates in a lot of ways, and things are going to be changing that we're not even aware of yet. And it seems to me this is a natural extension of that. I can see some of my favorite app developers building an extensibility to the watch that make my life easier. And I'm a geek, so I don't see myself putting something like this down.
You know, and there's one thing that I want to point out that I think I don't hear a lot of people talking about. A lot of people have been questioning the little built-in app that sort of, you know, lets you send your heartbeat or send the little drawn things or the little animated emojis, you know, that button. So you hit that button. And apparently that button is beyond the Apple Pay thing that we mentioned earlier, is dedicated to launching that little, I need to memorize what Apple calls that app, the, you know, the little motion chat messaging thing.
You got me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They have a name for it, and I need to commit it to memory, so I apologize for everybody for not knowing that. And Apple didn't even promote this in the thing. That button, that messaging thing, lets you send audio messages, right?
Yeah, the walkie-talkie.
The walkie-talkie feature. It's like a Dick Tracy watch. Come on. The one thing that people have been wanting since the 50s or whenever Dick Tracy was running, right? It's here. We finally get that. And no one's talking about that. So I think that's going to be another killer feature that people are going to enjoy.
So long as your phone is in your pocket.
Yeah. If by killer you mean I'm going to take off somebody's head the third time I have to hear somebody saying, no, seriously, I'm talking to you from my watch. I was disappointed. You're when I heard that they were going to do that. Because
probably
I'm just
thinking, annoying.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
but we've wanted
depends.
It forever. You know, it's up there with flying cars. We're supposed to have watches that we communicate with.
Or it's up there with FaceTime, and it's one of those things that everybody thinks they want, and then they don't actually use very much.
That's a funny idea. That's a funny idea. Yeah, well, we all wanted that with our watches when we all wanted watches. And then, you know, Apple and other companies put amazing, you know, timepieces on our phones with our music players and our movie viewers and our things where we surf the web, and we all quit wearing watches. Yeah.
Dick Tracy didn't have texting. Had he had texting, he wouldn't have a talking watch, right?
Exactly. OMG, prune face. Ah, right.
Well, I mean, that's like... I mean, just getting back to texting, though, I mean, one of the main uses I have for texting is if I'm in court and like a witness is late or something, I'm not allowed to answer my phone. You know, but someone can send me a text message. You heard that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to answer my phone, but someone can send me a text message and say, you know, witness is running late and my phone's in my pocket and I don't get that, then it causes all sorts of trouble. But that's how I get that information through texting. I couldn't stop and play a recording.
No,
but with it on my wrist, I would definitely get that information. And I mean, that's the kind of stuff in my life that would make things easier with something like this.
That makes a difference. That changes things. Well, cool. Man, we just hit the tip of the iceberg, I think, and all the stuff that's going to be happening. I mean, I think we're going to have another one of these sessions because the rumor is there should be some more cool stuff coming out this year, maybe in October. So maybe I can get you both to, commit to come back now, and we'll do another Three Amigos session. But this has been great. Thank you both for hanging out for an hour or so and just chatting about this stuff. So before we take off, give each a chance. Ken, you want to tell everybody where they can find your show and all the things that you do?
There's not time to say all of the things that I do. Here's what I would like to send people to at this point. iChart Radio and iChart Magazine. Both of them are available on iTunes now. EYE iChart. And then iChart Magazine is sort of like a daily rundown of Apple news, a lot like what happens on macOS can, but in printed and picture-y form that you can hold on to forever on your iPad or iPhone. And then iChart Radio is Mike LaPont and I getting together and talking over some of the biggest Apple news of the week in a very conversational and goofy form. We make cartography mistakes, and then we just make other stuff up. So I'd love it if people check both of those things out.
Very cool. Check that stuff out. And then David, how about you?
You can find me at maxsparky.com, and that has links to all the books and various things that I do. And also, I would ask you to, if you're interested, to go over to the macpowerusers.com, where Katie Floyd and I do our show. It's not a news show. It's more of a, you know, handling problems with your technology. I don't even know how to explain it, but go check it out.
Right. And you're both on Twitter, Mac Sparky for you and Mac OS Ken for Ken, right?
That is correct, sir.
Cool. And you'll find me. I'm MacCast. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you want to hear more, let us know. And we'll try and make this more of a regular thing. It's been way too long since we did this before. But thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. And I'm looking forward to hearing the end of your iPhone 6 journey.
That will be coming to an end in the next couple of days, because I got to make a decision before my 14 days run out. So probably by the end of the week, I will have an answer. So next episode of the MacCast, we'll hear the result.
All right.
Thanks, David. Bye. So there you go. The Three Amigos. You should definitely check out all the stuff that both Ken Ray and David Sparks are up to. This guy's got a lot going on. Check out Mac Sparky's field guides, his blog, MacSparky.com, also the podcast that he mentioned there, and be sure to check out all the other stuff that Ken Ray is doing. You may or may not know, Ken does a Star Trek podcast, which is incredible. They're going through every episode of Star Trek, starting with the original series, all through the movies. They did the animated series, all that stuff. And it's called Mission Log. You can find it on iTunes or just go to missionlogpodcast.com. Of course, Mac OS Ken and macosken.com, or just search for Mac OS Ken on iTunes. Really good stuff. So check all that out. And a big thank you to them for coming on and doing this episode with me. That is going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and recognize all of our show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Disc Label, PDF Pen for iOS, as well as Text Expander for iOS, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great apps over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth over at gazelle.com. And lynda.com. Lynda.com helps you keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. You can get a free trial just by going to lynda.com/MacCast. That's lynda.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank CashFly for supplying the bandwidth for the MacCast. You'll find them at CashFly.com, CHEFLY.com. And all of the advertising for the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They're at BackbeatMedia.com. If you have any feedback for me, you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you are always welcome to send an email or an audio comment. Send those to MacCast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That number is 281-622-4269. 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes with links to all the things we talk about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those at the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum. And if you'd like to follow me online between shows, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And if you happen to use Google Plus, we do have a Google Plus community. Just search for MacCast on Google Plus and you will find us there. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.